It is Sunday, July the 13th. We continue with our series. This is called Creation. We're very ambitious. Okay. We are on page 164 in Parshas Vayetze. And we're up to Pasuk Chaf Dalet, verse 24. And that's where we'll start from. But I want to recap a few points that we made at the very end of last week's class as the backdrop for this week's class. Yaakov is running away from Lavan, as we know. And we talked about last week how it was a seven-day journey that Lavan caught up with Yaakov. And he reached him. In fact, we'll start from Chaf Gimel, from 23, which is when he actually catches up to Yaakov. And he reaches him at Har HaGilad, the mountain of Gilad, Mount Gilad. We made a point last time on the previous page on in Pasuk Sukim Yud Tes and Chaf 19 and 20 that when they left, Rachel, what did Rachel do when they left? Okay, so I heard two words. I heard took and stole, but the right word is stole. She stole the idols. The Torah uses the word batignov Rachel. Rachel stole the idols of her father. And then we find the same word with Yaakov, that he stole what? Yaakov stole
his sheep.
No, it's his sheep.
The heart of
Lavan. He stole the heart of Lavan. The Torah uses those terms. We're going to have a showdown between Yaakov and Lavan, and this term of Gineva is going to be pivotal. Now, there's another term which is very important for us to be aware of, which is going to be brought up now in Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23 for the first time, but we'll see that it will be repeated several times in the next few Psukim. It says, Vayikach es achav imo, this is Lavan. Lavan took his brothers with him, and he chased after him a way of 7 days, meaning it took him only 1 day, but it was a 7 day journey. And he caught up with him at Har HaGilad. Now, the word I want to draw your attention to is the word Echav. Okay, it was his sons or his relatives, but he calls them his brothers because they are the ones who are with him in this battle. So Lavan brings his brothers with him. He brings he brings people with him to support him in this showdown with Yaakov. Vayavoy Elokim el Lavan ha'arami b'chalom ha'loila. God comes to Lavan ha'arami in the dream of the night. Vayomelon, he says to him, Hishomer lecha, be very careful. Pen tedaber im Yaakov mitov adra, lest you speak to Yaakov from good to bad. Meaning, don't say anything to him. Don't speak good to him. Don't speak bad to him. You be careful. So Hashem appears to Lavan. Lavan really wants to attack Yaakov. But Hashem appears to Lavan and makes it clear to Lavan that he had better be careful. Now, that essentially nips it in the bud. What exactly is Lavan going to do now? If Hashem appears to someone and says, you better be careful, most people are going to be careful. So Lavan now, and we're going to follow what he says to Yaakov very carefully, he's left with very little recourse in what he can do to Yaakov. Hashem said, be very careful. From good to bad, be very careful. So as we move along, Vayaseg Lavan es Yaakov, Lavan caught up with Yaakov, Vayaakov taka es ahalo bahar, Yaakov pitched his tent on the mountain, Vayalavan taka es achav bahar hagilad, and Lavan, he literally means pitched his brothers, but it means that he set up his camp with his brothers, again that word Echav, his brothers, on Mount Gilad. So they're both on mountains. Apparently there's a valley between them. So they're facing each other, face to face. Vayomer Lavan liYaakov, and Lavan says to Yaakov, Me'asiso, what did you do? Vatignov es livavi, you stole my heart. There's the first accusation. Lavan says to Yaakov, you stole my heart. And you treated my daughters like captives of war, of the sword. Why did you hide to run away? And you stole from me. Accusation number two. You stole from me. Though he got it to you, didn't tell me. And I would have sent you away with happiness and with song and with drums and with a harp. I would have had instruments. We would have had a whole going away party as soon as Preda. Veloni Tashtani and Lanashek Levanai, believe no so. You didn't allow me to kiss my sons and daughters. That would mean his daughters would be Yaakov's wives, his sons would be Yaakov's children, which would be his grandsons. Ata hiskalta aso, now you have acted foolishly, as they translated. Yesh le'el yadila aso simachemra, I have the strength to do bad to you. Ve'lokei avichem, but the God of your fathers, emesh amar elai le'imor, yesterday, which means last night, said to me, quote, he shamar lecha, be careful me daberim Yaakov, from speaking to Yaakov, mi tov ad ra, from good to bad. Ve'ata ha'lochalachta, now you have surely gone. Because you desire the house of your father. Lama ganavta es Elohai. Why did you steal my God? Or my gods? So there's the third use of the word gineva that Lavan uses in his accusation of Yaakov. So before we read Yaakov's response, this is Lavan's accusation. So Lavan is upset. He ran away. You took my daughters. You didn't let me kiss them before they left. You treated them like captives of war. I could have really, really hurt you. I could have attacked you and really hurt you very badly. But Hashem appeared to me and told me I better be careful. So now you've gone. But why did you steal my gods? Now you see what Lavan is doing over here. Lavan is kind of in a bind. He came to fight. He came with his fists raised, with his sword drawn. That's what he's out to do. But Hashem caught him in the middle of the night before he had a chance to start a war with Yaakov and warned him, you better be careful. So Lavan is frustrated. What does he have left? He's there to fight. He's angry. He's there to start a fight with Yaakov. But Hashem has told him, you better be careful. So where does that leave Lavan? So Lavan has a litany of complaints, but does not actually end off with anything but one major point, and that is,
why did you steal my gods?
Why did you take the idols? Because there's nothing left that Lavan can really get Yaakov with. He wants to get him for running away with his daughters. He wants to get him for treating them like captives of war. He wants to get him for not letting him have a whole party before he left. That's what he wants to get him for. But Hashem said, be careful. So Hashem has told him, you can't hurt Yaakov. So Lava has to find something that he has a legitimate claim against Yaakov. See, the other things, Lava knows they're not legitimate claims. He knows that had Yaakov told him that he was leaving, Lavan would have done everything possible to stop him from leaving. That's why Yaakov had to run away. So Lavan is left with the truth. And therefore, the last thing he's able to say is what actually is true, which is, why did you steal my gods? Lavan is in effect talking to Hashem over here and saying to Hashem, all right, you don't want me to get him for running away. You don't want me to get him for not giving me a chance to kiss my sons and daughters. You don't want me to get him for not letting me throw a party. All right. But hey, he took something of mine. Even you, Hashem, you have to agree. He had no right to take my things. Why did you steal my gods? And as we will see, that is a legitimate complaint. Lavan has something to grab hold of. And that is, why'd you take the idols? How could who admit to what thing? Who says it was such a private matter?
Well, obviously they knew he had it. Yeah. You know, just seeing his, he could always make another one. Why he would even admit such a thing?
Well, I mean, if making another one, it could be that they're expensive. It could be that these are his special ones. And they didn't. I mean, Lavan knows that they took them, like Yaakov took them. So he's willing to admit it in order to. He's trying to catch Yaakov on something. He's found something. So then this is a legitimate complaint.
How did he know they were taken if he was running?
How did he find out? Yeah, that's a good question. He came home. I suppose he ran into his idols to pray to them to help him catch Yaakov or something like that. And here they're gone. So, as we saw, he has three times he uses the word geneva, theft, against Yaakov. Now, one more point before we read Yaakov's response. Look carefully on the Hebrew side in Pasuk Chav Ches in 28. I'll read it again. Veloni tashtani l'nashek levonai v'liv nosa. You have not allowed me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Ata now, hiskalta aso, you have acted foolishly. Look at that last word in the Pasuk, in the Hebrew side. The last word. Aso, which means you've acted, or how you've done. It comes from the word asa. Remember, the Torah has no vowels. The Sefer Torah has Esav. Those are the exact letters of the name Esav. The word aso is a funny type of word. It's a strange conjugation. It does fit over here, but there are many ways the Torah could have said it and not used the three letters of Esav's name, aso. This is not coincidental. Why is Lavan using Esav's name over here?
Because Esav has the reputation of stealing
and
being an
idolater. Okay. Lavan is well aware of the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Lavan is well aware of all that has gone on between Yaakov and Esav. Remember, Lavan's daughters were slated for Yaakov and Esav. He's intimately connected with the family. Rachel was supposed to marry Yaakov and Leah was supposed to marry Esav. Here, he invokes the name of Esav as if to say, remember, what was the final outcome of the blessings that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov and then to Esav?
She acted like Esav.
Okay. Yaakov will always be on top unless Yaakov fails in serving Hashem. Yaakov holds all the cards. It's all up to Yaakov. And so if Yaakov begins to act like Esav, then Esav will be on top. Here, Lavan invokes Esav's name to say, as if to say, Yaakov, I got you for something. You have acted like Esav. You stole from me. Don't pretend you're so perfect, Yaakov. And to Hashem, he's saying, don't tell me Yaakov is so perfect. He did do something wrong. And since he did something wrong, I am able to get him. So what is Yaakov's response? Now remember, he doesn't know that the idols were taken. Rachel did not consult with Yaakov before taking it. So Yaakov isn't aware. So let's see what he answers. Laman Alf 31. Vayan Yaakov, Vayomer LaLavan. Yaakov answers and he says to Lavan. Now he's answering each point by point. Ki yareisi, for I feared. Ki amarti, for I said. Pen tigzol es benosecha me'imi. Why didn't I tell you I was leaving? I was afraid, for I said, lest you steal my daughters from me. So here Yaakov is turning the accusation around. And he is accusing Lavan of being the thief. Now what's the difference between tignov and tigzol? Geneva and gezela? Anybody know? Ganav and Gazlan. The punishment is a little bit different, but what's the difference in the act?
Maybe one's on top and the one's on open.
Correct. Ganav is done quietly, stealthily, and Gazlan is done openly. If a person grabs something away from somebody else and runs away, that's a Gazlan. A Ganav does it quietly. He breaks into his house at night and takes something, that's a Ganav. So Yaakov is saying, I was afraid you would be gozel your daughters from me in a more brazen way. You'd take it right in front of my face. You're accusing me of sneaking away with your things. I'm afraid you would have just taken your daughters right in front of my face. With whom you discover your gods, he or she shall not live. That person shall not live. The one who took them shall not live. Neger achenu. In front of our brothers, Haker lacha mo'im adi v'kachlach, recognize for yourself what is with me and take it for you. V'lo yada Yaakov. Yaakov didn't know ki Rachel ginavasam, that Rachel had stolen them. So Yaakov says to Lavan, all right, I was afraid you were going to take away your daughters from me. And you are accusing me of stealing your gods. I didn't steal your gods. And no one of my camp would have stolen your gods. My people don't act that way. Whoever has your gods will not live. And in front of our brothers, again, that word brother, in front of our brothers, recognize what is yours, that is with me, and take it back. And Yaakov didn't know that Rachel had taken them, had stolen them. Now Yaakov is very sure that no one in his camp would have stolen those idols. And therefore, he's willing to concede that to Lavan and say, look, Lavan, if you're right about the idols, fine. Whoever has them should die. Because that's not me. That's not my people. But he doesn't know that Rachel had stolen them. Could there be another meaning in what Yaakov is saying? Is Yaakov simply stating an empty threat? Is Yaakov simply saying, I am so sure that no one took them, that if they did, they should die. That's how sure I am. It wasn't anybody of my people who took them. Or is there something more that Yaakov is saying over here?
Didn't Yaakov have Nevoah?
Yes.
And he didn't...
Nevoah doesn't mean you know everything. Nevoah means you know what Hashem chooses to tell you.
Even an intuition, a doubt...
The Torah says, the Torah is testifying over here. Yaakov did not know.
No, but did he know she wasn't going to be buried with him? That she would die before. Could have been the grandchild.
Not being buried with him does not necessarily mean she has to die beforehand.
Could he be threatening anybody of his people who took it? Because if they would have taken it, then maybe they would have been using it for Avodah Zarah.
Okay, I wouldn't say that he was... you're correct up until that. I don't think he was worried anybody using it for Avodah Zarah. But Yaakov is saying more than that. Yaakov is saying, I stand for MS. I stand for truth. I stand for being above board. What was the word I saw that they had one of these, one of the candidates was giving out their you know, for DeKalb County. So their list of things they guarantee. So I really like the way they wrote it, even though I don't believe them. But the way they wrote it was, totally transparent finances. Yeah, right. But Yaakov is completely, totally above board. That's what Yaakov is saying. Me and my people, that's what I stand for. And that is what Yaakov stood for. Yaakov, remember, each of the Avos, each of the patriarchs, had their Midah, their character trait that they stood for. Abraham stood for Chesed, and Yitzchak stood for Gvura, for strength. Yaakov stands for Emes, for truth. There is no lie, no deceit, no theft in Yaakov. And Yaakov is saying, if there is someone in my camp who did not act totally above board, that person will not live. Now, is this a curse? Mm-hmm. How would a curse have been said?
No, I don't think it's a curse. When a tzaddik speaks MS, his words come true. I don't think it's a curse.
Well, the Chazal say there is an element of his, it's his words that did it over here. But what would have been the natural way to utter a curse? The one who stole them
should die.
That's not what he says. He says, shall not live. It's almost like Yaakov is saying, the person can't possibly live. If it's one of my people, my life is based on Emes. And my people is based on Emes. Hashem takes care of us because of Emes. If someone has lied, stolen, acted deceitfully, they are outside of my camp, and then they can't live. Hashem's bracha will not be found in that person. It's almost as if it's natural. The person can't possibly live because they can't be part of my camp if they acted this way. Lo yichya.
Why does the Torah have to tell that Yaakov didn't know that Rachel stole it? Is it giving us a premonition that this is already established by Kadosh Baruch that she would not be buried with him?
Again, not being buried with him has nothing to do with this. That could have happened in many, many different ways. It didn't have to happen this way.
That she'd be buried where she was for when they went into exile?
That also could have happened in many other ways. It didn't have to be this way.
Because he would have never said that.
The simple answer is that the Torah is saying he never would have said it had he known that she stole it. That's the simple answer. Yeah. That's the basic answer.
It's like if he's been blinded, that he didn't even have, because he was so great and
No, I wouldn't say blinded or so great. I think he understood that anybody in his camp, because of how he acts, would have to act totally above board. We're going to have this. No, but she didn't. She stole.
He's thinking all those little children.
She stole. So we're going to see in a moment. This showdown is going to be based on Lavan is accusing Yaakov of being the thief, and Yaakov is accusing Lavan of being the thief. This is going to come down to it's going to come to a head momentarily, and we're going to see we're going to see each one with their statements. The Yaakov is now stating that if it's in my camp, it can't possibly be. Yeah.
I mean, to have other gods is against the Torah.
Correct.
So what's the big deal? I mean, because there's a time where God said destroy the idols.
Right. So you are echoing...
It's a big deal. It's a good thing that they take the gods.
That's right. You are echoing Rachel's opinion.
Right.
That is why Rachel took them. Rashi tells us Rachel took the idols to separate her father from idolatry.
Why did she take it, not destroy it? Not throw it on the way.
It could be she wasn't able to throw them away. I don't know what... You're asking why not just throw them out. Could be it wasn't such a simple thing to do. They were on the run. I don't know.
But if she did with the Rakhavana in mind, why would she punish it?
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Let's see as we go along.
I think it's also a very odd syntax. That whole syntax. Isn't that very strange?
How would you have preferred it to have been written?
Not like that.
With whom your God shall be fined shall not live.
Right. It's very odd.
With the one that you find it with. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, instead say the one who stole them. Don't say the one who, with whom you find them. Yeah. That's true. That's a good point. Now let's see what happens next. Lamed Gimel 33. Vayavo Lavan v'ohel Yaakov uv'ohel Leah uv'ohel shtei ha'amahos. Lavan came into the tent of Yaakov, the tent of Leah, the tent of the two maids, v'lo matza, and he didn't find. Vayetzei me'ohel Leah, and he left the tent of Leah. Vayavo be'ohel Rachel, and he came into the tent of Rachel. So Rashi explains to us, the tent of Yaakov mentioned in the beginning of 33 is actually the tent of Rachel. That is the tent of Rachel. Since Rachel was the main wife, therefore the tent of Yaakov is the tent of Rachel. So Lavan really went to the tent of Rachel twice. He went to the tent of Yaakov, which is the tent of Rachel. Then he went to the tent of Leah. Then he went to the tents of the two maids, and he didn't find it. So he left the tent of Leah, and he went back to the tent of Rachel.
Maybe what it's saying is that first he looked at Yaakov's things, and then when he came back, he searched Rachel.
Okay, okay. We related. When he went the first time, he looked at it as Yaakov's tent, because he assumed that it is Yaakov who did the stealing. When he then searched through and didn't find it, but he knew somebody took it, then he went back and he looked at it in a different light, as Rachel's tent, not as Yaakov's tent, and to see if he could find it this time. Rashi tells us that he suspected it was Rachel, because Rachel was a mishamshanis, which means she used to look, she used to search through things. She would touch things, look through things. So he suspected it was her. Now, Lavan would have found it, because Lavan did a very thorough search. Anybody who has ever been with someone on Vedikas Chametz night, when you search for Chametz, if you've been with someone who is, different people do B'digas Chametz in different ways. Some people do it very quickly. Sometimes you get someone who's extremely meticulous. So that gives you an idea of the way Lavan did it over here. Whatever it takes on B'digas Chametz night, Lavan was far more meticulous than that. He managed to go through every little thing that Yaakov owned.
Wasn't that very insulting?
Was what very insulting?
You know, what he did. You know,
what Lavan did?
He did
Sure, of course it was insulting. More than insulting, how would anybody like it if their father-in-law searched through all their things? I mean, it's an insulting thing. Sure, of course it was insulting. 34, Rachel lakha es hatirafim, and Rachel had taken the idols, v'tesimeim b'char ha'gamol, and she placed them in the cushion of the camel, the cushion that you would sit on the camel. Vateshev alehem, and she sat on them. Vayimashesh Lavan eskol ha'oel. Lavan searched the entire tent below matzah, and he didn't find them. Tomer Elaviha, and Rachel said to her father, Al Yichar Bene Adoni, it shouldn't be angry in the eyes of my master, Kilo Uchal Akumi Panacha, that I'm not able to stand up for you, because of course a daughter should stand up for her father. So she said, don't be upset that I'm not able to stand up for you. Ki Derech Nashim Li, because it is the way of women for me. I'm not well in my cycle. Vayichapes, and he searched. Velo Matzah Saturafim, and he was unable to find the idols. So she was sitting on them. She fabricated a story that she couldn't get up, and that's why he was unable to check the camel.
Wasn't she quite pregnant at this point?
Well, I don't know if she was quite pregnant. She was already pregnant, it would appear. Yeah, but that doesn't mean she was quite pregnant. It's also clear in Chazal, in our sages, in the Gemara, that in previous times it was not unusual for a woman to have her regular cycle even when she was pregnant. I understand today it's still theoretically possible, but highly unlikely, and that then it seems to have been more likely just from the way it's discussed in the Gemara. So it could be that she was pregnant, but nevertheless she said this, and it could be that she wasn't showing it, you know, whatever it is.
You can't have a cycle in front of
The doctor here can say it.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Vayichal Yaakov. Yaakov became angry. Vayarev b'Lavan, and he fought with Lavan. So now we're going to read Yaakov's testimony about himself and about the whole situation. So before we go further, why is Yaakov angry now?
He didn't find anything, so he figured the whole thing was a ruse or something.
Good. Good. That's true. Got fed up, okay. Might it have to do with the previous pasuk?
Does he realize that Rachel has it?
I suspect that Yaakov now knows. Because of the laws of family purity, a man would know what point in the cycle his wife is. And he would know if Rachel was making up a story here. I suspect that now Yaakov knows that there's something amiss. Right. So now Yaakov turns around and says, hey, this is gone far enough. Because Yaakov now already knows, I believe, that essentially he's condemned his wife Rachel to death. All because of Lavan. So now comes the response back to Lavan. And now we have a scathing attack against Lavan. Vayan Yaakov, Vayomer Lavan, Yaakov answers and says to Lavan, Ma pishi, ma chatasi, ki dalakta acharai, what is my sin? And what is my sin? Two words for sin. The first word, pishi, means a deliberate sin. Chatasi means an accidental sin, an oversight. What on earth did I do to you that you have come after me? I didn't do anything deliberate against you. I didn't even do anything accidental against you. What on earth are you after me for? Ki mishashtas kol kelai, you have searched through all of my utensils. Ma matzas mikol klei beisecha, what have you found from all of the utensils of your house? He means to say, there's not even a paperclip in my things that belong to you. Nothing. Simko negen achai v'achecha. What does that mean? Simko, place here. How do they translate it here?
Set it here.
Right. Set it here. If you found something, put it down over here. In front of my brothers and in front of your brothers. V'yochichu bein shneinu. Let them decide between the two of us. Let's have them be the court of law. Ze esrim shana onochi imach. These 20 years I am with you. Rechelecha v'izecha lo shikelu. Your sheep and your goats did not miscarry. And your various sheep, I didn't eat. I didn't take anything of yours to eat. I didn't bring to you a torn up animal, an animal that was torn up by a wild beast. I would be the one to lose it. You would seek it out from me. If there was ever a sheep missing, it would be my loss. It would be deducted from my pay. And you would seek it out from me. Gnuv si yom, ugnuv si laila. Whether it was stolen during the day or at night. Again, the word gneva. If it was stolen during the day, whether it was stolen during the night, it was my problem. Hayisi vayom achalani chorev. I was during the day, I was eaten by heat. V'kerach b'alayla, and cold at night. V'atidad shnasi me'enai, and I pushed sleep away from my eyes. Zeli esrim shana b'esecha. These are to me 20 years in your house. Avadaticha arba esrei shana. I worked for you for 14 years. Bishtei b'nosecha, for you two daughters. V'sheish shanim b'tzonecha, and 6 years for your flock. And you changed my wages 10 monim. As we mentioned, a mana is 10 times. So 10 times 10 times is 100 times. Lulei Elokei Avi, if it wasn't for the God of my father, Elokei Avraham, the God of Avraham, Ufachad Yitzchak, and the one who Yitzchak feared, Haya Li, if he was not for me, Ki Atare Kamshi Lachtani, for now you would have sent me away empty handed. As on ye, my poverty, Ves Yegia Kapai, or my affliction, Ves Yegia Kapai, and the effort of my hands, Ra'a Elokim Hashem has seen, Vayokach Amesh, and God has admonished you last night because of that. So this is Yaakov's testimony about his own scrupulous behavior in Laban's house. I worked for you for 20 years. I never took anything of yours. Anytime there was anything missing, I had to make up for it. It was always my problem. You have nothing to complain about. Your whole running after me now has no basis, and everything you've done is completely out of line. This is Yaakov's response to Laban. Now, this is a standard. This is the standard of Yaakov. And this is why we say that Yaakov is emes. When the Torah is writing this over here, it's not that Yaakov is claiming it, but it isn't true. This is 100% true. Everything Yaakov says in these few psukim, this is Yaakov. This is what Yaakov stands for. This is what he's all about. This is what chesed is to Abraham. Emes is to Yaakov. The pasuk says in Micha Titein Emes LiYaakov. This standard really is meant to be the standard of the Jew. It's lamentable that unfortunately we don't always live up to this, and sometimes Jews can be found cheating and not acting as they should. Our standard is meant to be what Yaakov here is proclaiming. This is the way one works for an employer. The Gemara tells us about, I believe it was Abba Chilkiah, who was one of the Tanaim, one of the sages of the Gemara, that one time he was working and people passed by. He was working and people passed by. He was plowing a field and people passed by and said, Shalom Aleichem Rebbe. He said hello to him, and he didn't respond. Later, when they asked him why he didn't respond, he said, because I was working for my employer. I was a hired hand for the day. If I would have stopped to answer you, that would have taken away from the work for my employer. He looked at himself that while he was employed, his time was completely owned by the employer, and he had no right to take even a split second away from the employer. An incredible thing. The Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us, that if a person hires somebody, and part of the wages are that they'll get lunch. So, I'm hired by an employer, and he's going to give me lunch, and he's going to give me 100 dried figs for lunch. That's my lunch. And that's part of the wages. That's part of the deal. I'm working for him It's part of the deal. I'm going to work for him. And included is lunch. So the problem is that my employer is not someone who's trustworthy when it comes to separating tithes. And so, really, I need to take some tithes off over here in order for me to be able to eat it. And there's a suspicion, I don't want to get into the technical details over here, but there's a suspicion that one of these 100 I really can't eat because it's supposed to go to the Kohen. So there is a machlokas, there's a difference of opinion in the Mishnah. What should I do? One opinion is, I should separate one and eat 99. That way I can eat the 99, the other one I'll give it to a Kohen later. One opinion is, you can't do that. Because since the employer gave me 100, and he expects me to eat 100, and I should have the strength to work for him of having eaten 100 figs, I can't simply not eat one of them. Then I won't be as strong as he expects me to be to complete his work. So it's not so simple to not eat the extra hundredth one. It's a nuance. But the nuance is what Yaakov stands for over here. Yaakov is telling us that you think it's ridiculous. Like, come on, what's the big deal? How much better am I going to work with the 100th fig over the 99 figs? But the point the Mishnah is making is that if you have a deal worked out, an employer and employee, you have to be perfect. You have to live up to the standard. Now, I don't mean to say that today a person can't take a coffee break, because today it's understood if you're an employee, then employees get coffee breaks. That's part of being an employee today. So it's built into the system. So whatever is normal, we can do. But we have to be very, very careful not to abuse the system and not to take advantage of too many coffee breaks and too many things like that. If there is a pen that is at work, we there are pens that are available, it's not correct to take one home. If there are paper clips, it's not correct to take one home. If there's paper, it's not correct to use the paper for our own use. Unless it's an understood thing that that's what employees do. But Yaakov here is the standard that we need to try to live up to. And that's what he's saying over here to Lavan. I did nothing. I took nothing of yours. You can't find one thing in my possession. After being with you for 20 years and accumulating whatever I accumulated over 20 years, there is nothing here that ever belonged to you.
Where is the idea coming from to give 1 fig to 2 coin out of 100?
That has to do with a technical thing about tithes, with miser, which I don't want to get into. It's a whole discussion in and of itself. I'm just trying to bring out the point that it's not so simple not to eat it. I'm just trying to show you that nuance that the Mishnah talks about. Yeah.
I don't believe she was pregnant because of Sukkos. She died after Sukkos. He spent a year and a half in Sukkos. So if so, then according to Rashi, then she couldn't have been pregnant now.
Okay. Okay. There we have it. Okay.
So what did
the man
end up doing?
What's that? There's a difference between what to do over there. What do you do in that case? Is the question. Is the question. Right. Right.
What did he do? What did he mean by so he admonished you last night?
Because Hashem had appeared to Lavan and said, be careful not to hurt Yaakov.
He says, not to speak anything good or bad.
Right.
Why speak? Because he could curse him?
I suppose. We'll get into that. We'll get into that later about whether Lavan has the ability to curse. We spoke about it yesterday. But we'll get to that next. That'll be next week. We'll talk about that. Okay. Now, that is Yaakov's scathing response to Lavan. Lavan says back in 43, Vayan Lavan, Vayomer el Yaakov. Lavan says back and he says to Yaakov, Habanos Benosai, the daughters are my daughters, the Habanim Banai, and the sons are my sons, the Hatzon Soni, and the sheep is my sheep. V'chol asher ato ro'eh lihu. Everything you see is mine. So Lavan, it all falls right off of Lavan. He doesn't hear it. It's in one ear and out the other. He doesn't acknowledge it at all. The whole thing Yaakov said, as far as Lavan is concerned, forget it. It has nothing to do with anything. It's false. Lavan is telling the truth. Yaakov's the liar. Lavan is the truthful one. Yaakov is the thief. But he says, V'liv nosai ma'eseh la'ela hayom, and for my daughters, what should I do to them today? Or to their sons that they have born. He's in a sense saying over here, well, but they are my daughters, they are my sons, so how could I hurt them? They're my relatives. Now even though, before Hashem appeared to him, he was very ready to hurt everybody, including his daughters and his grandsons. But now, he's like, oh, well, I can't do anything about them because they're my relatives. Now he's going to continue, and we're going to have Yaakov and Lavan make a covenant between the two of them. And we'll see how much time we have about reading them. Before we do that, I want to go back and show you a pattern in the term Echav or Achiv, his brothers. As I showed you in the beginning that word was going to be used frequently over here, I want to show you how that word is used. As I mentioned when we first read it, back in Pasuk Chav Gimel 23, when Lavan first chases after Yaakov, it says, Vayikach es Echav Imo. He took his brothers with him. And those are his relatives who are there to fight with Lavan against Yaakov. They are there, they are with Lavan, totally with Lavan. Then Yaakov mentions the brothers again. In 32, Lamed Beis, he said it's in the middle, Neged Achenu, in front of our brothers, recognize what's yours, that's with me, and take it. Now what does it mean by our brothers? Who's he talking about? A brother can be a relative, doesn't have to be an actual brother. But what does he mean, our brothers? He's saying, in front of our brothers, put it down, let's see whose it is. Okay, let's hold that question. Look a little further. Pasuk Lamed Zayin 37 says, you've searched all my things, what have you found? Simko neged achai v'achecha. Put it down in front of your brothers, my brothers, and your brothers. And let them be the judges between us.
In English, it's kinsmen.
Kinsmen, relatives. Right.
Yeah, relatives. Right.
Right, kinsmen.
So it would be his brothers-in-law. No.
It sounds like people taking sides. Mm-hmm. That originally Lavan is saying, you know, they all come and they're the people that Lavan has brought as his backup. But then, as this thing is playing out, they're not sure who they want to follow.
Excellent. So. Okay, excellent. So, first it's Lavan's kinsmen. Then Yaakov says, our kinsmen. Then he says, my kinsmen and your kinsmen. There's starting to be a shift over here. And I know we haven't gotten to it yet, but I want to skip ahead. And if you look after this whole episode is over, they're going to make a covenant between the two of them. And we'll get to that if we have time tonight. Otherwise, we'll do it next week. But in Pasuk Nun Dalet 54, it says, Vayizbach Yaakov Zevach Bahar. Yaakov slaughtered an animal on the mountain. Vayikra Le'echav Le'echol Lachem. He called to his kinsmen to eat bread, to break bread. They ate bread and they slept on the mountain. Rashi says, who are his brothers, his kinsmen? Rashi says, La'ohavav she'im Lavan, with those who were his friends who were with Lavan. You see, Yaakov's testimony, it just rolls right off of Lavan's back. Lavan doesn't hear it at all. It means nothing to Lavan. But to Echav, to Lavan's brothers, Lavan's kinsmen, they are profoundly affected. They are being swayed and moved through this whole discussion back and forth. Because to the listener, it is clear and obvious that Yaakov is the truthful one and Lavan is the liar. Yaakov is the one whose hands are clean and Lavan is the thief. That is clear and obvious to anybody who is watching. Yaakov is the one who says, let's call our brethren, let them decide. That's what he says to Lavan. He's basically saying, Lavan, you don't want to listen, fine. But let's take a third party. Those who are your kinsmen, they're going to become my kinsmen. You'll see. If we have this debate back and forth, they're going to switch sides. And that's what happens. It goes from Lavan's kinsmen to our kinsmen to mine and yours. Mine and yours are two different kinds. And in the end, they become Yaakov's. And if you notice, right after that, at the end of the parsha, in chapter 32, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Vayashkim Lavan Baboka, Lavan gets up early in the morning, Vayinashek Lavanov Livnosa, Vayvarach Hashem, and he kisses his sons and daughters, and he benches them, he blesses them. Vayelech, Vayashav, Lavan, Minkomo. And he went, and Lavan returned to his place. Why repeat the name Lavan? It says, Lavan got up early in the morning, and he kissed his sons and daughters, and he blesses them, and he went, I would have just written, and he returned to his place. Why Vayashav Lavan Limkomo? So contrast that back to the beginning, when he chases after Yaakov, it says explicitly in Chav Gimel 23, Vayikach es Echav Imo. He took his sons, his kinsmen with him to chase after Yaakov. But when he goes home, there's no mention of the kinsmen. Now, they may have gone also, but they didn't go with him. They didn't go back to their place. They didn't go back to where they were before they came after Yaakov. When they left, they were on Lavan's side. When this whole episode is over, they are no longer on Lavan's side. They are now, they've seen the light. They're on Yaakov's side. They may leave, but they're not going back to their place. They're not going back to the way they were. Lavan has not changed an iota. Lavan hasn't given an inch. As far as Lavan is concerned, he's been wronged. As far as Lavan is concerned, Yaakov is a thief. But the kinsmen, they see the truth. We, the readers, we are standing where the kinsmen are standing. We're watching this unfold. And we see that Yaakov is telling the truth while Lavan is the liar. Yes.
And we have a story in the Torah because it tells us that Emes is always the way. Hashem always spoke to Emes.
Okay, so that brings us back to...
The role model for us is the truth is always the way to God.
So that brings us back to the ultimate question over here, which is, as was brought up already, what did Rachel do wrong? And Rachel stole the truffles. She stole the idols. And her intention was completely pure. Her intention was to separate her father from idolatry. And in the end, she loses her life for it. That's what happens. Nobody's happy about that, but that is what happens. How do we understand that? How do we... Good. Okay, so she stole. But it was for a good cause. It was the right thing to do, wasn't it?
What she did wrong was it that she didn't tell her husband what she was doing.
Okay. If she would have told her husband, what would he have said?
No, leave him.
He would have said no.
But is this an issue of keep it up?
What do you mean?
She transgressed not just someone, this is honoring her father. She
it doesn't seem to be that that's the problem. Torah doesn't mention that as the issue.
But it's her father.
What is being said over and over again is theft. Yes. You see, it seems what the Torah is saying is that theft isn't justifiable. It seems the Torah is saying that you can't steal. You can't, two wrongs don't make a right. You can't justify something that is wrong to do because it is saving someone else from a sin. You can't say, the Gemara talks about this, you can't say that you should sin in order that your friend should be kept from sinning. If there's someone who is about to sin, and the only way to stop that person from sinning is by committing a sin, one can't sin.
That's plain God.
Okay, you can put it that way. You can say it that way. Right.
It's kind of confusing because, you know, she didn't, first of all, why is it called stealing? She, you know, when a child wants to eat sweet, you hide it. Or, you know, is that stealing? You know, you don't want the child to have that. You know, why is it called stealing when she didn't take it for herself? She meant it for the higher good. She meant it for a holy purpose.
If your child wants a sweet, and you have the sweets, they're yours, and you hide it.
But
if the child has a sweet, somebody gives the child a sweet. Let's say you're in shul, and somebody gives the child a lollipop. You don't want your child to have a lollipop, but they gave it to them already.
Right.
Are you allowed to take it away? Not so simple. Not so simple. The child has it already.
So, you know,
that's
the person who gave it to.
Well, that's the person's not here anymore. The person went away.
But
it's
she stole it. It becomes the child.
No, it wasn't a child.
That's what I'm doubting. You know, that it doesn't sound like stealing to me. She took something away from her father.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Baron,
it's like she hid his cigarette.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's right. We're dealing with Rachel. So if we're dealing with Rachel,
yeah,
who was herself a great tzaddikas, we're not going to be dealing with a terrible sin over here. We're going to be dealing with a very, very, very subtle thing. It's going to be a nuance. And on her level, on her madrega, she was held accountable for it. There's something very slightly wrong over here that she's being held accountable for, that if any of us would have done it, we would have been fine. We would have done nothing wrong, because for us, where we are, it would have been fully justifiable. But for her, where she is held to a much higher standard. You want to say?
Why was Abraham praised for destroying his father's?
All his idols.
All his idols. And she was punished, unless what she was punished for wasn't enough. That was just like the scapegoat thing. She was going to be punished anyway.
This really was sneaky. That doesn't have anything to do with her father having switched them when they got married.
It doesn't seem that way. It says her intention was to separate him from idolatry. It seems that Mrs. Wittenberg is correct, that what she's being taken to task for over here is the deceit, not destroying the idols. Taking away the cigarettes is fine if it's not done in a sneaky way. It's the sneakiness that's the problem over here. It was done in a way that it wouldn't be known that she did it.
Didn't we discuss earlier that she was going to get punished eventually anyway? So maybe there was...
We discussed earlier that she was not going to be able to be buried with Yaakov. But that could have happened in thousands of ways. Didn't have to happen this way. This is still her own free will of how to do it. What you brought up with Avraham, which I didn't think of, is a good example. Where there it was done overtly. And Avraham suffered the consequences. He was thrown into a furnace for it. And he would have died. He was willing to die for it. He didn't know he would have a miracle to save him. He was willing to get burned alive for it. That he was willing to do. Rachel here does it in a sneaky way. Now, undoubtedly, she thought that was the better way to do it. She didn't do it to save her skin. She thought this was the better way to do it for whatever reason she thought it was. And we can start discussing, you know, different logical reasons why that would be so. Rachel was smart, and Rachel was wise, and Rachel was a tzadikus. She was righteous. Nevertheless, when you're Yaakov's wife, and not only that, when you're his main wife, you're the one who was designated for him from the time the world was created. Rachel is meant to be Yaakov's wife. Then the standard of MS is such a high standard to live up to. Yeah.
I was comparing the intent of Rachel versus the intent of her father was ready to kill her. So, I mean, you would think Laban would have been punished.
Yeah, well, Laban is going to get it in spades. So I don't know why she didn't smash it. I don't know.
On her way out.
Yeah. So we learn again about the Midas that we're supposed to emulate by learning the story of the Torah, because we feel Miriam also. Prophet, she in high Madrega, right. The Torah she got because how she followed Moshe, and the same thing here with Rachel.
We've talked about Rachel before. We talked about her chesed. We talked about the incredible self-sacrifice. So, again, no matter how we're going to understand this, it's not going to be some horrible sin. It's going to be something in a very, 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 very nuanced level. But nevertheless, it seems that the major point is the deceit.
And why is it such a subtle, tiny, thing, her life?
That's the way it works for the great ones. The great ones are living on a madrigal, on a level which is the way it works for them. It's a privilege to be on that level. But it's very difficult.
So Yaakov is angry. He doesn't address that. He doesn't address the fact of Rachel. I mean, he may have he seems to be angry from the sukkim, but he knows what's going on now that Rachel took the idol.
It does seem that way.
He doesn't openly address it.
Right, because his point to Laban is this wasn't necessary. You ran after me, and you did get me on something.
But the damage is done.
But it wasn't necessary. Look, at 20 years, I was perfect for you. Well, what's this? This is ridiculous. That's.
Didn't Yaakov have done something or said something to nullify that?
Didn't he daven to Hashem?
The Gemara says it has to come true, and a tzaddik says that. I don't know the answer to that question.
It's true. I don't know.
We have to stop because it's time for mincha. We have to go. Next week is our last class before we break. Now it is a fast day next Sunday, but. Blean Eder. It's okay for me. And we have a little bit further to finish Vayetze, and we're going to end with an incredible shot in the end of Vayetze, as I said yesterday. My father knows it from yesterday already, for the last little piece. We saved the best for last. We'll do that, and then we'll talk about the schedule for the end of August.